What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 47 of Nerds United, Jittery Monkey Podcast Network, JitteryMonkey.com, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and PodDirectory.com. I am your host, your guide, Greg Mahochko, and I do appreciate you tuning in, hitting that subscribe button, hitting that download button on the website, liking the Facebook page, following on Twitter. I could go on and on. I don't have time for that. This week's episode, which we'll get to a very, very awesome guest that I had an honor to visit with. Actually, we recorded this last week, but due to the, I don't know, late publishing, if you will, of the Dr. Dan the Pancake Man episode, which was a very uncharacteristic Friday publish, I decided let's space them out just a little bit. And so my guest for episode 47 is Mr. Steve Higgins, who I met down at the Cape Comic Con. He hosted the Colin Bunn panel, the first panel of the day down there. We're supposed to start at 10 o'clock, and they started around 10:30. And I may have been to blame for that, but we didn't get into that, and he didn't bring it up, and neither did I. But real. Good guy, also a creator, of course, a longtime fan. He's an educator and has incorporated comic books into his syllabus, into his, I guess that's the right word, syllabus, lesson plan. This is why I didn't get into teaching, because I don't even know curriculum. That was the word I was looking for, curriculum. Very, very exciting conversation that we have, and he's also been doing a few other things in the summer months. Before we get to the meat, the bulk of the episode, if you will, talking about meat, there was a lot of flesh being torn about in Jurassic World, which I had the opportunity to watch this past weekend. Went to not my every occasion theater, but a theater from my past. I haven't been to this theater in a few years. Oddly enough, went and saw the first Marvel Avengers movie there, when it was in theaters, of course, years ago, with a bunch of friends who were from the St. Louis area. So, again, going back towards toward west for me, but the Metro East. Actually, my old stomping grounds. I grew up not too far from this theater. And if you're in the St. Louis area, you know about the Warenberg theaters. And I don't care how old I get. I'm 32, almost 33, and I still sit there in the theater during the little preview clip when they're going over the little, essentially the theater's trademark there. You know, we're here, we've been here for over 100 years, whatever it was, and they have the little music, the Warenberg theme, and they always have these surround sound voices, whispers, that go, Warenberg, Warenberg. And still, I still do that. I've done that for, 25, however long I've been going to theaters at Warenberg. I remember back in the day it was only Warenberg Cine 10 in Fairview Heights, and then they built the 15 cinema, and I just thought that was crazy. And then, of course, as I get older, you get into the St. Louis area more, and they have 20 theater, buildings, it was crazy. Crazy. Anyway, I went back to my old stomping grounds, not too far from where I saw the first Jurassic Park so many years ago in the theater, and back then it scared the wits out of me. I love it. I mean, it's a fantastic movie, and I thoroughly enjoy it now, but for whatever reason, back in the day as a kid who didn't watch a whole lot of movies, didn't have a whole lot of exposure to, that type of cinema, didn't sleep well that night. Jurassic World, I thoroughly enjoyed, and apparently I'm not alone, because it broke the record for best opening weekend at the box office ever, supplanting, oddly enough, Marvel's Avengers. So congratulations to the Jurassic World crew. Part of that, I think, is the Chris Pratt connection. I'm not saying that Chris Pratt would be the only actor who could, play that role and bring that kind of, charm or whatever, charisma, but he certainly, his profile elevated so much with Guardians of the Galaxy, and in a way he plays a little bit of that, I'm trying to avoid cliches and at the same time trying to be descriptive yet without spoilers. Little charming, a little, hey, how you doing? Kind of a cowboy, maybe? I don't know. For whatever reason, Cowboy Casanova came to mind, but I think that's a song. Is that a Carrie Underwood song? Girls, can you help me out here? Any girls listen to the podcast? All right, fair. It was worth a shot. So anyway, I enjoyed the movie. You could definitely tell that I think in this one they had a few more CGI dinosaurs than practical dinosaurs like they did in the first Jurassic Park. But if you get a chance, you might be listening to this and you might be the only person out there who hasn't seen Jurassic World. But check it out. I think you'll like it. And I think you will agree with me that we should never, ever, 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 ever try to genetically breed dinosaurs. It's just not going to work. My dog Coco, who, if you like the Facebook page, by the way, facebook.com/nerdsunitedshow, I'm interrupting her sleep time by recording this in the bedroom, and she gave me the evil eye, and she just snapped her head back and said, seriously, are you done yet? She didn't say that in English, but you could, you know, when you have an animal for so long, you can kind of read their eyes. That was the tone that she was throwing my way. So, Coco's ready for me to get out of here. Check out the Jurassic World. I think you will enjoy it. I gave it a solid A. One of the movies is out, and I probably won't get a chance to see it in theaters, but I'll watch it as soon as it becomes available, is Mad Max, the new Mad Max movie. That's definitely one. They've got a couple coming out in the next couple of months that I'm interested in. Ant-Man, Fantastic Four, of course, yet to come out this summer, and we'll discuss all of those in more detail as we get there. Once again, my guest for episode 47, Steve Higgins, and that conversation heads your way right after the jump.
Comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Welcome, everybody. Episode number 47 of Nerds United on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. Greg Mahochko, your host here. And, of course, you know by now that my home base is South Central, Southern Illinois, if you will. Salem, Illinois, to be specific. And my guest, and I just learned this, is from a very, you know, it's a long stone's throw. I mean, you know, I can't throw this far. You know, as the crow flies, I guess they say 12 or 15 miles away. He is originally from the town that boasts or brags, if you will, the winningest high school basketball team in the country. I don't know if they can still make that claim, but I know that they don't shut up about it. And that would be Centralia Orphans. You might have heard them. This is a stretch for this audience, but you may have heard of them a couple of years back. There was a nationwide vote, and they were named the USA Today Most Unique High School Mascot, the Orphans, and the female version, the Orphan Annies. Yeah, little Orphan Annie indeed. But my guest is from this area. Now, he has moved on and found greener pastures, perhaps, in the metaphorical sense of larger city, so you could almost say grayer pastures or grayer buildings. Anyway, we'll stop dancing around the subject, and welcome to Nerds United, Steve Higgins. Now, not only is this not technically his first time on an episode, but in a previous episode, he actually talked significantly more than I did. Steve, welcome officially to Nerds United.
Well, thank you for having me. Glad to do it.
We met up in, and when you say that, it almost sounds dirty. We met up. It was a dark alley and raining. Oh my! But we first met at the 10th annual Cape Comic Con. Is this point that this airs almost 2 months ago? Of course, Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and you were hosting the first panel of the day, which was Colin Bunn. And and as mentioned, you know, to you before, phenomenal panel. I certainly, you know, I enjoyed sitting in on it, and you have known Colin for a while, so you guys had that nice conversational chemistry. I mean, it wasn't an interview; it was very much a discussion with you know, some questions from you know, the Peanut Gallery, aka the crowd, like me. Let's talk about that experience and just jump right into it. Obviously, that familiarity, you know, lends a little bit and makes it a little bit easier when you're on a stage or a platform like that.
Right. I've known Colin for at least 10 years. I want to say I think it was the very first Cape Comic Con. I knew his artist partner on Six Gun, Brian Hurt, pretty well from previous conventions. This was before they had really started churning work out together. Colin was still kind of trying to break in at that point. And I was kind of there, the leader of their convoy down from St. to Cape Girardeau for the very first Cape Comic Con, and had dinner with Colin that evening and chatted with him ever since. Kind of over the years, we've touched base with each other every now and again. You know, every couple of months we'll you know, we'll see each other at a convention or something like that, and you know, once or twice a year, probably just once a year, we might actually go out and grab a bite to eat for lunch or something like that. And also, I teach a course on comic books at the school where I teach, Lewis and Clark Community College up in Godfrey, Illinois. Every spring, I teach that course, and I always try every year to bring in a comic creator to give the class, the students in the class, a little bit of a background on what creating comics is like from that point of view. And he has come on numerous occasions in the past to be my guest lecturer for the day. And so that's kind of how we built that rapport. What you witnessed and what your listeners heard through the podcast was really not much different than what I would do with my students in the classroom, really kind of just talk to him about the nitty-gritty of the industry and what he's working on and what he has worked on and how the collaborative process works, basically.
I definitely want to talk more about the teaching side of it, especially when I was going to school. And I don't want to say, you know, back when I went to school, we had to go walk 5 miles in the snow uphill both ways. No, not quite. I'm old, but I'm not that old. There was not a comic book, you know, class. There wasn't I took English Lit, and I took Classic English Lit, and, mm-hmm. and you know, things like that in my advanced studies, which, granted, let's not get carried away. I don't have a master's or doctor or anything like that. I've got an associate's from a community college, but they didn't offer comic book. Had they offered a comic book course, I would have aced that one. it goes, I think, maybe to show how far this medium has progressed in society. You know,
it really has.
It's a part of a curriculum. I mean, you can go into a university, and I know this because I've got a friend who went to Webster University, and he took a book on, you know, or a course on comic books or superheroes or something like that. And he mm-hmm. next thing you know, he's calling me up. He's like, "So I've got this project to do on a superhero, and I chose the Green Lantern. You want to help me with it?" Because he knew that I'm a Green Lantern guy, and it boiled down to I pretty well just did the project. So, and he passed, and that's all that matters. But yeah, go on. I didn't mean to cut you off, but yeah.
Oh, no.
It's so ingrained now in society.
Yeah, there was an article in Wizard magazine about 15 or 20 years ago now that listed at the time all of the different universities throughout the country that were teaching courses on comics. And it was a very short article. You know, it was only a few schools, but as I read that article and was really intrigued by it and intrigued by the idea, because at the time I was a comic fan who was studying to become an English teacher and, you know, always had an interest in melding the two. And so I thought about it, and it initially started while I was attending SEMO in Cape Girardeau for my bachelor's degree in education many, many years ago. That I had a project that I had to do, talking about a teaching unit that I would put together, and I did Marvel's, the Kurt Busiek, Alex Ross, originally a miniseries, and then, you know, a trade paperback. I did a little unit on how I would teach that book, which eventually, when I did become a teacher at a community college and proposed that we do a comic book course, I did actually then go ahead and get to teach that book. So, but yeah, at the time it was, you know, let's see if you can sneak one comic in here or there. But, but you know, I hear from students all the time that they've read Mouse in a history class in high school. The Women in Literature course at my school teaches Persepolis by Marjane Satrapi. You know, and so as more literary comics have been sneaking into the curriculum that way, you know, just a straight up class on comics has become more and more prevalent, so that now there are actually a number of different colleges in the St. Louis area where I live that that do offer courses in comics here and there, so much so that there is a group called I don't know if it's still called this, if they changed their name or not, but a few years ago when I first heard about it, the group was called Slack Off, the St. Louis Area Comics Friendly Faculty, Slack Off. and it was, again, we even put together a conference one year, probably about 5 years ago now, that we talked about what courses we were teaching, what comics we were teaching in those courses, and our approaches to them. So, you know, it's something that I've done every year now for the past 8 years or so. And then I did it at a previous school before I was at Lewis and Clark for 2 years there. And, you know, it really is a fun course to teach. Because many of the students, they come in knowing a great deal, obviously, about the mainstream stuff that they see in movies. You know, we cover superheroes in the first unit, and then I move them past that to talk about crime comics and horror comics and sci-fi and fantasy, and with realism as well. So I get them to see beyond just what they're already familiar with, and see the whole world and the whole spectrum of what comics can do. And I think they really get their eyes open, and they really enjoy the class too. It doesn't hurt that I end up giving them, over the course of the semester, at least 30 free comics.
I got to sign up for that class.
Yeah, I tend to get good reviews. You know, good teacher recommendations, teacher evaluations at the end of that course. I don't know why.
I would imagine that, you know, as you develop, you know, that first curriculum or syllabus or whatever, that you almost have to get the superhero stuff out of the way, because that's the stuff that everybody, you know, is most sweeping. You know, right behind superhero stuff, I think is Walking Dead, or I think it. Most people probably would, you know, there are probably some people out there who don't know that The Walking Dead was a comic first. I mean, they're probably, you know, so I think, and again, you don't need my affirmation, but I think you're doing it the right way by getting, you know, that stuff out, you know, and then you can cleanse the palate with, you know, some more of the, I don't want to say deep-rooted, but some of the fringe, you know, genres of comics even.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, it's not that I disparage superheroes in any way or say, you know, I'm not into them. I read a ton of superhero books myself, and, you know, I'm gung-ho for it. just like they are. But I want to kind of broaden their perspective a little bit. So I always followed up with crime because we can kind of go from that and their background knowledge of the, you know, Batman and the Punisher. So we can go from that into, okay, how is that different from the world of Sin City or the world that Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips have created in Criminal? You know, how is that world a little bit different than the superhero fighting crime? And then, you know, kind of go from there into even darker stuff. I like the dark stuff. That's what it boils down to.
Where do things like 100 Bullets, you know, fit into the course or into the curriculum?
That's one of the things that DC has done and Marvel has done as well. Image has done it. That they've done a really great job of promoting their older stuff. You know, some of the stuff in their back catalog by releasing the first issue as like a dollar comic. You know, you can get the first issue, a reprint of the first issue for a dollar. And so over the course of a year, I'll buy up a whole bunch of copies of those dollar issues. And then, you know, when we're in the middle of the crime unit, we'll be talking about whatever book we're reading as the main book. And I'll say, hey, you know, another really good crime comic, if you are enjoying this, is 100 Bullets. And here's the first issue. Why don't you give it a try and see if you like it. And if you do, I'm sure you can then go and hit up a comic shop and find the trade, or, you know, go to Amazon if you must, but try a comic shop first.
the comic shops in your area or in the area of the school have to be, you know, well on board with this plan. I mean, it you know, even if they get one person who, you know, prior to taking the course had no interest, they're like, oh, this is going to be an easy class, easy A, I'm going to, you know, sign up for it. And then you might convert them to become, you know, a lifelong reader, and you know, the brick and mortar will be like, thank you, Steve. We appreciate it. Here, you can have your next, you know, year's worth of you know, comics for free, for the course. We got to, you know, your classroom materials, as they say.
Well, they're never that grateful. They still see me as a revenue stream, I think. But they definitely are happy, and you know, they are willing then sometimes to then donate books. You know, if free comic book day comes around, for example, and they end up with some leftovers, you know, they'll say, hey, Steve, you want to grab, you know, 20 copies of this to give to your students? Go ahead and take them. And that's always, you know, something that I'm really glad that my comic shops are supportive of that. So,
well, I've got no problem, and I've asked a lot of people, you know, who have comic book shops. I've got no problem with you plugging your shop or shops, if you want to name drop them here real quick.
Well, sure. The shop that I went to for years was Star Clipper. Was located in the Loop in Del Mar in U City, which is a, you know, an area in St. Louis. Unfortunately, they closed. They did reopen just recently under new management. Many of the staff are the same. They're now located on Washington Avenue. It's kind of downtown St. Louis. Unfortunately, it's a little too far for me to drive from the suburb where I live to get to downtown. It's a little bit far. So now I'm shopping at a place called the Fantasy Shop in Florissant is my branch, because it's really only about like 5 minutes from my house. They're one of the shops that is, you know, has gaming and has comics as well. Star Clipper, I always loved that they were just a comic shop, but you know, Fantasy Shop is a great shop as well, and the people that work there are really great and really friendly. So those are kind of my two home based shops, basically.
I
recommend them all the time to my students and to anybody I know who's visiting the area.
I'm the same way. You know, I talk up my comic shop, you know, quite a bit. I've sent friends over there. I had a buddy of mine, because my comic shop, Twilight Comics, Shiloh, Illinois, recently moved. And they didn't move far. It was like 3 miles down the road. So now I've got to say, Twilight Comics, Swansea, Illinois. But a buddy of mine texts me. He's like, did Twilight move? And I'm texting him direction. I'm like, yeah, you're going to want to go hang a ride at the lodge. You go down about 3 miles. You can't miss it. Sign on the left, blah, blah, blah. So I love, you know, going to places. You know, when I travel, I like to go to, you know, some of the stores. You know, I was in Dallas a few months ago and went to Titan Comics, and that was only one. I was only down there for a day, so I didn't have a whole lot of time to, you know, browse around or you know, shop variety. I kind of had, oh, there's one close to the hotel. Let's go check it out. Dragged my poor wife, you know, along for the ride, but it's okay. She's come around quite a bit since I first met her. Go ahead.
Right. I just remember when I was a kid, if you know, when we were traveling to Florida to visit family or to Colorado to visit family, I was always like, do they have a comic shop nearby? Let's check it out. And I'm the same way now that I'm a grown up. You know, I'm traveling to San Francisco or Washington, D.C. or someplace. Chicago, obviously, make it up there every now and again. You know, I'm gonna visit the shops in the area to see what I can see, to check them out, because every shop's a little bit different, and you kind of want to get the feel for them. How do they do things here?
Sure, and one of the things that I'd like to do, especially with the platform of Nerds United, the podcast, is visit with these, you know, owners and hear their story. Everybody's got a story, and you know, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people want, maybe they don't realize that they have a story, or that people want to hear the story until someone asks them. So that's, I will never forget, a few years ago, my wife and I vacationed with some friends of ours up on the coast of Oregon, and we drove up, my wife and I, to Astoria. Every time you think of or you hear the name Astoria, you think of the Goonies. So we actually went by, you know, the Goonies house, which is now a private residence. It doesn't look anything, you know, like it did, obviously, 20
right.
plus years ago, whatever it was now. But in the using the navigation, there was, we were told, a comic book shop in downtown Astoria. We could never find it. I don't know how many times uh-huh. we went up and down that main drag. We just, you know, we packed it in. We gave up. We went to a beer store instead and took beer back for everybody. So, you know, it's a nice consolation prize, but it's still a consolation prize.
Right.
You mentioned being a kid. We were so far into it that it almost seems silly now, but we got to hear the origin story. You're from Centralia. I'm vaguely familiar with Centralia, but I've never heard that Centralia had its own comic book shop. Is that the case? Or when you were growing up there, did they have something for you?
Well, let's see. When I was very little, there was, for a brief time, I can't even remember the name of it. I want to say it was about a year that a comic shop was open in Centralia. But I was fourth grade, fifth grade, you know, very young. They had a used bookstore that carried comics, and you know, it was basically, you know, the situation where they got a couple long boxes of really old back issues that, you know, you get for a dollar kind of situation, you know, really cheap. And it didn't matter to me if the comics were new, if they were old, as long as they were comics and I could get them, I was trying to get my hands on them. You know, at the local grocery stores, I'd peruse the few that they would have at the racks there. When I was really little, and I'm talking like 5 or 6 years old, I remember that grocery stores, you know how you go to the grocery store now and at the checkout line they have all the magazines and things.
Of course.
But they have a couple Archie Digests at some grocery stores.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
DC used to do digests that were that size, and they were, you know, this is in the late 70s, early 80s. They were called Dollar Digests, and you could, for a dollar, get, you know, basically 100 pages of comics, and it would be some random Superman stories, some that were recent, but mostly that were reprints from, you know, comics from the 50s, but also Legion of Superheroes, Justice League, and they always did one each year that was like the best of DC Comics each year. And I remember one year there was a couple Swamp Thing stories in it, Alan Moore Swamp Thing, and I remember I'm like 8 years old reading Alan Moore Swamp Thing and having my mind blown by it. And I think that was really kind of what got me hooked, more than just reading about Superman, but here was this really weird story that I'm like, what is this? This is awesome. When I was in high school, there was a comic shop in Mount Vernon called Scotty's Comics, and I had friends who were old enough to drive, and so we would make like a monthly trip over there and just grab whatever we could off the racks. It closed, I want to say my junior year of high school, and then the bookstore in Centralia, it was a place called Books and Company, was then carrying, they had an account with Diamond, and you could set up a pull list, and they would carry stuff. And I actually worked my senior year at that bookstore, and you know, was always there then on comic day and picking up the comics.
It's sad that at my age, I still have a dream of working in a comic book store. Maybe someday we'll have Nerds United the store, and we'll just have a studio in the back for the podcast, but it hasn't happened yet. So, yeah, I mean, you certainly answered a lot of the... I always like to get somebody's origin, you know, their origin story. You said late 70s, early 80s, just, you know, from meeting you when I did down in Cape, I would have never guessed that you were older than me, and that's, I think, a compliment. But I also understand that here in the past week, you also just celebrated your 14th wedding anniversary with your wife, so congratulations on that.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much.
And so obviously, I mean, you've got a few years on me. I'm not going to, you know, we're not going to get into any specifics, but you very... probably very clearly remember the days of the Saturday morning cartoons.
Yes, and I watched, you know, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. I watched the Super Friends and the various incarnations then of that, the Superpowers series that they did, and the Incredible Hulk cartoon that was paired with Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. You know, I remember those very vividly, and that was really what got me into it. And, you know, I saw, I don't think I saw Superman in the theater, but I'm pretty sure I saw Superman 2 in the theater. One of my first movie-going experiences, that along with Return of the Jedi, I remember seeing in the theater when I was, you know, 5 or 6 years old, whenever that came out. It really is. And that's something that, going back to me being a teacher now, when students come into my classroom saying they've seen the Avengers, they've seen Captain America, they've seen the movies, you know, I never hold it against them. Everybody's got an entry point, basically. Everybody's got an origin story, like you said.
Absolutely.
And how they get into comics doesn't matter to me so much as once they get their foot in the door, they want to get their leg in the door, and they want to get their whole body through the door, and then they want to join that world and frolic and play in comic land like we do.
You know what? It's not the first word that you used that really, like, all right, I'm dealing with a legitimate English tier. You actually used the term peruse, and now it's frolic and the English, you know, speaking individual that I am, and I'm not, this is going to sound bad. Well, I don't, probably won't sound bad to you being that you're an English teacher, but I'm a grammar Nazi, and I love the use of big words. You know, I actually, while you were talking, I'm like, can I fit loquacious into the conversation somewhere? And I did, but not, you know, now, but not in the, you know, the natural intention of it, right. You know, getting it flow freely. So thank you. I love these. Man, a lot of times you hear colorful language and you think, you know, profanity. But man, when I can talk with an artist, a verbal artist who really, you know, just uses the entirety of the English language. Oh man, this is not the geeking out I thought I would do on this conversation, but it's going really well.
Thank you.
So it's, you know, it. The Saturday morning cartoons, I have memories. I'm not going to say they're vivid memories because, you know, I've slept since then. But I have memories of Saturday morning cartoons. Hanna-Barbera was, mm-hmm. you know, big. You know, I'm born in 82, so, you know, I was working through the Smurfs era, you know, things like that, right, Top right. Cat. But I remember my first comics were like hand-me-downs from my uncles, and I didn't know that, you know, hey, you should take care of these. I'm going to teach my future children that. You're going to take care of these comics. You're not going to draw on them, which nobody told me. But I remember, you know, and it was a collection of Marvel stuff, had Kung Fu Master, had an old, like, military or army, you know, World War II comic or something like that of a story depicting that. Anyway, just a lot of random stuff in this brown paper sack, and I just remember laying on the family room floor as a kid and on my stomach, you know, in the traditional kid way. You know, the mm-hmm. the knees are bent, mm-hmm. the feet are up in the air, and you're on your elbows, and you're just reading away, and, you know, Papa Smurf's in the background, you know, complaining about Gargamel. So right. That's a lot of my memories of my first time, you know, with comic books. And I certainly found some, you know, on the spinner rack and the grocery stores, things like that as I grew older. But it really, for me, wasn't until, man, I was mid-20s. And I said, I'm just going to, you know, go in there. I've got some interest in a particular character. Next thing I know, I'm dropping $75 in, you know, on a few trade paperbacks. And I said,
yeah,
okay, well, apparently this is what I'm going to do with my money now.
Yeah, it reels you in, but, you know, in the end, there are worse ways you could be spending your money.
And you're... Oh, go ahead.
I just today saw something somebody posted on Facebook about the 13 types of people that you see visit a comic shop. And, you know, a lot of them are you know, pretty disparaging of some of the customer types, you know, like the guy that comes in every week to browses in quotes and, you know, obviously somebody who's reading the comics and then just putting them back and leaving. The guy who comes in every week with a... to give people the opinion of the latest movie, but never actually buys anything. And that's kind of the end of every single one of the types, except for the very last type, and that was the type that I identified with, and that was the guy that actually buys weekly comics on a weekly basis. And you know, a little picture of him saying, what other way, you know, what other way would you want to drop $75
absolutely right.
in a week for 2 hours worth of entertainment.
I guess I have the benefit of my, you know, being in Salem and my shop being, you know, more towards the Metro East, in that I might be able to get over there once a month. I have had, you know, that Facebook message or that phone call, hey, we haven't seen you in about 2 months. You gonna come by anytime? we're just gonna start charging your card until you show up, and you know. But no, they take real good care of me, and they're patient with me, and I get over there when I can. And but yeah, it's, you know, I went over there. Speaking of anniversaries, my wife and I went to Fairview Heights, which people in this area, you know, the St. Louis metro area, you know, we went over there, had dinner, did a little shopping for her. And I said, honey, while we're here, you know, might as well swing by Twilight. And we did, and I spent $80, and this is our anniversary, and she just, like, and this is the joke that we have, you know, I spent $80 at the comic shop. She looks at me, and she says, you're an expensive date. I said, I know, but you love me, and she does. But so we talk about money, we've talking about comics, let's talk about how your love of comics, and you're trying to make money, because you are also a creator, and a couple of different things that you're working on, but let's start with Ink and Drink Comics, because that is, I'm guessing, the name of the publishing group that you're with, or?
Right, exactly. We are a collective of artists, writers and artists, here in the St. Louis area. We meet once a month, the third Tuesday of every month, at Cicero's, which is a pizza place on the Loop, at 8 p.m. We've got the back room kind of set reserved for us every month for this meeting. And I say meeting, it's really just us getting together and talking about comics and talking about if we're working on stuff on our own, what that is. Those that are artists kind of show off what they're sketching, what they've been drawing lately. We talk about the comics we've been reading, and we drink, and we have pizza, and we hang out. when the group initially started, I was actually not a part of it, but several guys that I knew from my comic shop, Star Clipper, were a part of it. And I got invited along when they decided that they were going to go from just being a group of guys who talked about comics to a group of guys who make comics. I had been doing some mini comics on my own before that, not really much success, but, I was enjoying it, at the very least. And they knew that I was making comics and said, hey, why don't you do a story for our first book? This was in 2010. The first book we did was Spirits of St. Louis. It was a horror book that we released in late September of 2010, timed, for Halloween. There was a convention in St. Louis called Project Comic Con that was scheduled for that that month, and so it was like, we got a deadline, we got a book to get out in time for that convention. And I just contributed. I wrote a story, I had a friend I knew draw it, and it was in the book, and the book did really well, very successful. We sold through our first printing that weekend at the convention. We did a second printing and sold it pretty well. Star Clipper was kind of our main base because several of the people who contributed stories actually worked at Star Clipper at the time too. So we had a release party and we did really well and sold a bunch of copies at the release party. And so we decided, let's keep going. So we kind of have moved through over the years a number of different genres of comic. We did crime with Shots in the Dark. We did Western with Off the Wagon. We did, Fantasy. Hammered was the name of that book. All the names of our books are drinking puns, if you haven't gathered that.
We did Spirits of St. Louis. It's all coming back now, yeah.
Yeah. Tanked was our war book. Blasted was our sci-fi book. And on and on. And so now we've been going 5 years. We've done 10 books. I guess actually we've done 9 books. A 10th book was a collection of the Free Comic Book Day mini comics that we've done. So 9 main books. Our most recent 2, we finally got around to doing Superhero. And that was last fall. Fall of 2014, we did that, a book called Liquid Courage. And then just this past month at Wizard World St. Louis, we debuted our kids book, all ages book, called Juice Box. yeah. And, it's gone well. We've continued to do well. We don't necessarily make money, but my joke about it is it's become easier and easier for us to break even over the years. So that's a good thing. It really is a labor of love. Somewhere along the way, I'm not exactly sure on the timing of when that happened. I want to say it was in the second or third year. There were 3 guys that were the editors, Carlos Ruiz, Jason Green, and Brian Hollerback. Well, Brian Hollerback moved, left town, and had to move away. Since I was a very regular contributor and they knew that I was an English teacher and knew my grammar, they asked me if I would step up and be the third member of the editorial group. And so ever since Hammered, the fantasy book, I've been involved in the behind-the-scenes stuff, too, not just the writing, but the publishing, the editing, the coordinating of the books and everything. So it's been very rewarding, very very fulfilling creatively, if not financially. But but yeah, it's again a labor of love, really.
And let's talk about some of the behind the scenes stuff. I mean, when you're working with a group of individuals, and they're submitting something, let's start from the editorial aspect of it. Do you look at a script before it's, given to art, or, walk me through the process. If I,
sure.
If I or someone I know you know, wants to, you know, work with Ink and Drink to get a story that's in my head out there, I would what essentially hand you a script, or how would that go?
Well, here the very first step is that we as an editorial group have decided upon the theme for each book and what the deadline is. So I mentioned that we just did our kids book. You know, we had the deadline for that back in, I want to say, February, mid-February. Maybe it was early March. I can't remember exactly now because I've slept since then.
Absolutely right, yeah.
But basically, you know, guidelines that we gave were, you know, it's got to be appropriate for a kid age 6, 8, 10 to read. But beyond that, anything goes. You want to do science fiction, as long as it's age appropriate, that's fine. You want to do talking animals, as long as it's age appropriate, that's fine. You know, whatever you wanted to do. We've had tighter guidelines than that in the past when, you know, when we were doing a Western book, it, you know, gets a little bit tighter, but even in our Western book, we had, you know, Western stories set on a frontier planet rather than, you know, the frontier, here in America of the Wild West, you know, transplanting that into a science fiction realm. And, you know, we do get a wide variety with the stories that we get, but it's basically us laying down a guideline and us laying down a deadline. And from there, if people are wanting to contribute, we basically just tell them, hey, touch base with us. Let us know what you're working on. Let us know how many pages it is. If you want to give us a script, that's great. You don't have to. We have a staple of creators at this point that contribute to pretty much every book. And, you know, for most of those, we can kind of trust that they're going to be appropriate, not be out of bounds in any way or anything. But really, you know, if you want to contribute, it is open submission. We are a very open group. We're not, you know, it's just us. Our kids' book had somewhere between 15 and 20 people in it that had never contributed to one of our books before. So, you know, we're very open to new members, new people wanting to contribute.
And this is Ink and Drink, and you are not the first, I don't want to say independent publishers, but, you know, I guess I'll have to call them independent publishers from the Metro East area that we've had, because a few times now on Nerds Unite, I've visited with the folks from Stash Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
So is there collaboration, you know, between your groups or other groups in the St. Louis area, or, you know, just kind of everybody, not to say that it's a competitive market, but, you know, because I would imagine that, you know, in something like this, if you've got someone who can write or do art for DC and Marvel, certainly they could do the same for Ink and Drink and Stash. I would imagine that it's very much a cooperative atmosphere in that neck of the woods.
Yes, very much so. You know, we have had people from Stash come to our meetings before. We've had a couple contributions from people from Stash in the past. There's a couple other groups in the St. Louis area, one group called C4, one group called the Urchin Collective, that, again, there's a little bit of overlap here and there that really, if you are in the area, and not even necessarily in the area, but if you know somebody who lives in the area, and if you're friends with one of the members of the group already, and you're working on something, and you say, "Hey, I hear your next book is a kid's book. Well, I've got this 6-page story that I'm working on. It's a kid's story. Do you think it could fit in?" And we're going to say, "Well, the deadline's this time. If you get it done by then, send it to us. We'll look at it and we'll let you know." And we don't reject much, honestly. You know, I think I can count on, you know, over the course of 9-10 books that we've done, I can count on my two hands the number of things that we've had to reject, maybe even one hand the number of things that we've had to reject. And usually it was just that it was not up to snuff. It was rushed. People were trying to get it done under the deadline and didn't have the quality quite there. But, you know, in the end, those deadlines are pretty serious. We're pretty strict about them. But if you're willing to participate, if you get it done in time and submit it to us, we'll definitely consider it.
And you know, you've got to enforce a deadline, when, especially when you are releasing, you know, a book or having something to show at, you know, a St. Louis Wizard World or something. I mean, if there's an event that you're planning on presenting a product, you better have the product.
Right, exactly. And that is, it's good for us too. You know, if after that first book, if we had just kind of let things fizzle out, you know, we would have done just the first book and that's it. But we set deadlines for ourselves and we've been strict to them. We've kept to them. And you know, if the deadline rolls around and your stuff's not ready, usually we can give people like a week leeway, you know, okay, you're almost done. Can you be done by Friday? If so, then we can definitely still accept it. But we're actually talking about doing a book in about a year's time, maybe a year and a half, 2 years. We're not exactly sure when. But doing a book that is a collection of stories that people didn't get finished in time for previous books.
Oh, nice.
And you know, kind of doing it as a hodgepodge thing to say, all right, here's and we're debating the title, if we're going to call it Hungover or Bottom of the Barrel. We're still kind of unsure of which of the two that's going to be.
I kind of like Bottom of the Barrel.
We've also talked about combining the two and saying Hungover, Stories from the Bottom of the Barrel. And that might actually be the one that wins, but again, it's up in the air. We're still debating if that's going to be the book we do in a year or if it's going to be a year and a half or two. Our next book, the one that we're working on, you know, people are doing stories for right now, is going to be called Sober.
That doesn't seem to fit.
Its deadline is August 1st because a group of some of our creators, actually two of the editors, Carlos and Jason, who I mentioned before, will be traveling out to Bethesda, Maryland for SPX, the Small Press Expo, kind of the largest convention devoted to independent comics publishing. And it's a crowd that is very into indie comics, and nonfiction is the genre we're going with there. Stuff that's autobiographical, stuff that's historical, stuff that's got a journalistic spin to it. You know, there's a lot of kind of free reign even with nonfiction, but that's the guideline, the guiding idea behind it.
A lot of exciting things going on at Ink and Drink. Where is there a website or where, you know, Facebook page that folks can go and check out these books and maybe even possibly purchase them online and have them delivered via a wonderful courier service?
Indeed, inkanddrinkcomics.com. We do have a Facebook page too, and that is just Ink and Drink Comics. There's a Facebook group, which is if you're, you know, a member, if you're someone living in the area and looking into contributing, you can join the group. But there's also the page, which is where we kind of promote our stuff, both on Facebook. And we have a Twitter account, but we don't tweet very often, to be honest. but you can follow us as well. You know, if they wanted to pick up a book, if you're in the St. Louis area, we are available in Star Clipper and Fantasy Shop. We're working on becoming available in more places, but our website, inkanddrinkcomics.com, you can order our books online.
There is another website that you are affiliated with, I feel we need to bring up. I'm going to, I've got to give the website, and then we will talk about how this came about, or we'll do it that way. Kitties with potty mouths .tumblr.com, or as I found it, just kitties with potty mouths via Google. What the hell?
Well, I mentioned that before I was affiliated with Ink and Drink, I was kind of doing some mini comics on my own. And they tend to be comics about, real life kind of stuff. And I would set up at a couple of conventions. I set up at Wizard World Chicago, set up at Project Comic Con here in St. Louis. I did a couple other little conventions. I think I did Capes Convention a couple of years, and I didn't sell hardly anything. And it kind of got to be frustrating to me to watch people kind of walk past me and walk over to booths where people were selling very, very cutesy stuff, and it was selling, or very, very crass and crude stuff, and it was selling well. So I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a webcomic that combines the cute and the crass, Kitties with Potty Mouths. It's lolcats, basically, but with lots and lots of swearing. And so that's what I did. It was born out of my frustration that I couldn't sell my comics at a convention. And I said, okay, people want cutesy crass stuff, here you go. And again, the funny thing is that, you know, it kind of took off. People really, really like it. So originally it was just me photoshopping pictures of cats to say crude things. Then I added a feature on Fridays that is the opposite. We have horrible man-eating sharks saying very nice and helpful things. That is cuddly sharks with kind hearts. That's the Friday edition. And then 2 years ago, I added a comic strip that Thursdays, I actually do a comic strip. I have some friends who illustrated some stock images of cats that I then do a little comic strip of. So Monday through Wednesday are photoshopped pictures of cats. Thursdays are the comic strip, and Fridays are cuddly sharks. And I've updated daily for almost 5 years now. So it's turned into a whole thing.
I'm not real familiar with Tumblr. It's one of those social media platforms, for whatever reason, I'm not on. probably because I don't understand it. But is there, you know, this is going on, you know, as you mentioned, updating it daily or almost daily now for 5 years, or give or take. Is there like a shop? I mean, Grumpy Cat has a shop. I mean, can people buy it?
I've looked into ways to advertise this many, many times, and they have all failed. I tried to print some greeting cards once upon a time. I tried to make coffee mugs. I tried to do prints, and I still have copies of a lot of those things in my closet because I could never get people to actually buy them. I did a T-shirt.
I'm
the sole owner of a copy of that T-shirt in the world because nobody else was interested. So yes, I've tried to monetize it in various ways, and it's never really come about. I have said that once I hit 1,000, and I'm coming up on that, I'm about 100 away from that. So by this time next year, at the very least, I'll have passed 1,000. That's when I will look into doing a book, a collection of my favorites, perhaps, as a book. And maybe that will actually go somewhere. Who knows?
The way I see it, because I'm sure you're familiar with Texts from Dog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That guy's got a book. I mean, you know, Kitties with Potty Mouths should have a book.
I would agree with that. But
maybe.
Getting that to a publisher.
That's true. That's true. Thing. Maybe, and I'm just throwing something out here, so, you know, if this is where you hang up on me, I understand. But maybe there needs to be some kind of story tie-in through Ink and Drink where it's just cats drinking bourbon and smoking cigars and being filthy-mouthed cats.
I actually had thought about doing a Cuddly Sharks. The Cuddly Sharks, the, you know, the nice ones for the kids' book that we just did, but I wasn't able to get something together in time, unfortunately, so... That's an idea that'll just have to live on the back burner for a while till I can do it on my own, I guess.
A lot of things. I mean, you're a busy guy. I mean, we were talking about it. We were like, okay, well, we've got this window on this night, or you can try 3 weeks from now. But you've got a lot of things going on. Do you teach? I mean, over at Lewis and Clark, do they have summer courses or?
They do. I have not taught over the summer for a couple of years now. I have a 3.5-year-old daughter, and since she was born, I decided I wanted my summers off to actually get to spend a little bit more time with her. So that's what I've been doing with my summers since. I used to teach at least one, if not two, classes every summer just for the extra money, but and I would usually use that extra money to funnel into making comics.
or buying comics.
True. But yeah, the past couple of years, I've just enjoyed the time off a little bit more with my daughter.
I'm a firm believer in family first, and seems like, sir, you've got all of your priorities in order. They can, you know, folks can, where are you located at on social media? If someone wants to tweet at you, can they follow you on Twitter or...
Yes, I am at VacuumBoy9, 1C, 2Us in vacuum, and if you're not familiar how to spell the word.
that might confuse a lot of people.
at VacuumBoy9 on Twitter, and as I said on Tumblr, it's kitteswithpottymouths.tumblr.com.
And if you are like me and you're relatively uninitiated to Tumblr, there's no E in the word Tumblr. Keep that in mind.
Exactly.
and of course, they can go to Ink and Drink Comics on Facebook, inkanddrink.com. And you're helping. I've got to mention this because we talked about it, you know, in green room conversation, if you want to call it that. But you're helping a buddy of yours with a little film project. Tell me a little bit about that and plug what he's working on.
Yeah, a couple friends of mine... their husband and wife, a writing team, a couple of years ago, they wrote a short film, which they funded and then shot. It's a short horror film called Innards, and it kind of did a circuit for a while and did pretty well at a number of different film festivals. So they wrote what's turning out to be a feature-length film. Same director, same female lead on it. They are the two writers, this husband and wife team, Lainey Frizzo and John Forrest. The feature is called Drinksgiving. It's about the night before Thanksgiving, how that frequently is a time where old friends get together and have a party or go to bars or whatever. A girl named Sarah decides to throw a party for all of her friends who are coming back to town. And shenanigans ensue, basically.
Ooh.
It's one night at a party, and I play a character named Chuck, who is a bit of a frat boy, heavy drinker kind of guy. A little fun to play around with. It is my first acting experience since being in a play in high school, you know. But they've over the years... you know, every time that they would have a script, they would show it to me and kind of ask me for my advice, and I'd read it and give them some thoughts and, you know, suggest a couple things, and I've always valued my comments and things. So when it came time for them to do this feature, they said, "We want to get you a part in this. We've loved your input on our stuff in the past. We want to get you a small little part." And it is small. It's only 10 or 15 lines, but... But still, it's been fun to be a part of it. It's shooting right now. I shot one day last week, and I'm shooting 2 days in the upcoming week. And then they're wrapping, I think, Wednesday of next week. But, yeah, it's been an interesting experience.
I have used to be in an organization where we would traditionally meet on Thursdays for our meetings, and obviously can't do that on Thanksgiving, so we would instead meet on Wednesday, you know, much like you know, the situation. We always called it turkey before turkey, and the small group of us, I think you know where this is headed, would drink a bottle of Wild Turkey that night.
My
least favorite meeting of the year. I'm a beer guy. Loyal listeners know that, hey, when I'm recording at the house, there's a good chance that there's a beer in my hand. A lot of times, it's a Schlafly. I'm sure you're familiar with Schlafly there in St. Louis.
Yes, definitely.
Tonight, however, it was the Leinenkugel Summer Shandy. So, there you go, Leinenkugel from Wisconsin, somewhere up in Wisconsin. I don't know the exact town, but Wisconsin, where they're known for two things, cheese and beer. And I'm all right with that. But, Steve, I got to thank you, sir, for taking some time out of your evening and away from your family, especially, anniversary week to visit with me here on Nerds United. And I had a lot of fun, and hopefully we can get you on and talk. We talk a lot of comics, but, I mean, there's so much we can talk about. We can talk about, the comic adaptations and television shows and movies and things like that. We'll have to have you on again down the road and just visit again.
I would love that.
That is Steve.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And that is Steve Higgins. And again, you can best way to keep up with him, if you're into foul mouth felines, kitties with potty mouth, all one word, .tumblr.com, or on Twitter, you can follow Steve directly, vacuumboy9. And I'm not going to spell vacuum. If you don't know how to spell vacuum, you're in trouble. Vacuumboy9 on Twitter. That is Steve Higgins. I am Greg Mahochko. This is Nerds United episode 47 on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. Thanks so much for listening. Tell a friend.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.